welcome to the 193rd episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. I hope you had a Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, and are getting ready for a safe and healthy new year. My little taper after the Sacramento Marathon and the holiday half is over, and but ready to get back at it. The next event is Thrill in the Hill 50K in February the 16th in Georgia. So look forward to doing that with my plant strong registered dietitian, Addie Meinrich, as well as Michael Hubbard. So go Team Delaney. We'll be ready to hit the hills. If you're there, hope to say hi and see you while we're there. My taper didn't amount to a whole lot. I just cut the mileage down over the holidays. Pretty much ran every day except Christmas Day. Dealing with a little bit of some tightness issues. After the marathon in Sacramento, I had some tight hamstrings and my glutes were tight, my low back, and things have needed a little bit of tweaking. I wasn't sure exactly where the problem was. I've never had any kind of hamstring issue. Did more weight training than I usually do. I can't really say why I got into this tightness issue other than just a lot of races and a lot of miles and, perhaps a lot of, I don't think I sit that much at work, but I probably sit enough that, things tighten up. So I need a little bit more attention. I always come back to these, the debate stretching versus mobility versus active release versus keep moving versus rest. Just taking time off has never been something that's worked really well for me unless, it hurts too bad to actually move. Typically when I get out running, things loosen up a little bit. So I don't think that's the issue because then you start to lose overall fitness and you have to build that up. And if you just let everything go back to where they were as a means to letting things untighten, then I think you actually are at risk for having this similar issue come up again. So the idea is to kind of work through and figure out what's going on. And at first I blame my hamstrings a little bit, maybe a little tendonitis in my hamstrings, but I actually really think it is more of a psoas issue from and associated with tight hip flexor muscles. That's kind of led to some overcompensation and into my low back. So it's back to the things that work to help me to release. So in the past, planks and bird dog, I call them opposites, have always helped me to release. I'm a big fan of Kelly Starrett. I need to get him on the podcast. He wrote a book called The Supple Leopard to doing some, flossing of the psoas muscle, as well as some hip release type things using bands. So I actually attach a pretty tight band to a stationary device. And, while my hip's in a neutral position, kind of move it around to make sure that the capsules is loose. And that actually seems to be helping. Next week, I'm going to interview Dr. Mark Cucuzzella, who just wrote a book, Run for Your Life. And I've been reading his book in preparation and just been trying to alter my running gait and to address some problems there that might actually be causing some of the problems, a little bit of decreased flexion of my toes and things. So I'll save all that stuff for when we talk next week, and I'll use him to kind of sort through things with me. But the good news is things seem to be getting better, and I'm starting to bump up the mileage, and everything else feels good. I had an opportunity to meet in person with my strength and conditioning coach and son-in-law. And, after some evaluation, we're going to fine-tune things a little bit better to strengthen some potential weak areas and pay more attention to things that I should be paying more attention to. And so hopefully everything will be okay. I had the pleasure of having a PA, a physician's assistant student in my office for a couple days this week. And it's very nice to have someone that's just entering the medical field that's interested in plant-based nutrition. I had some other questions by email asking about what happens in my overall practice. And you know, it's been a long evolution for me. I'm sort of in the later stage of my career. I had a long private practice, consultative cardiology practice, that involved a lot of hospital work over the years. And so there was a lot of long evolution of, you know, how I have chosen to practice medicine based on lifestyle. We've always treated our practice more as first and foremost, how we would like to be treated is how we treat other people. And we've made a goal over the years never to have people waiting. And so I've always been against this model of big box medicine type of thing where people sit in the waiting room for hours. So we've never overbooked. We've always been very transparent. Our patients are our family, and our family has been around the office. So people have known my daughter over the years. And so there's more than just a doctor-patient relationship. Our families have blended a little bit. And I've also been able to incorporate my interests and passions over the years, and that's evolved even before I went to a membership, more of a wellness practice here in the last year or so. But, you know, what I've always liked about the practice of medicine is solving the puzzle and fitting the pieces together and observing. It takes time to practice medicine. It's just not put your symptoms in and somebody spits out an answer. People are complex individuals, and, you know, I love to observe human behavior, and human behavior has a lot to do with health issues and making a diagnosis and being able to take time to talk to people and fitting all the pieces of the puzzle together. And with a passion for fitness, you take that into the situation as well, trying to encourage people. It's not just go out and exercise. It's, you know, it's always been about what do you do now and how do you move and what are you interested in, and trying to help people sort through that and sort through their movement problems. And with the change of the practice into a membership where we have a lot of time to spend with people, we can really delve deeply into that and figure out where people's weakness are and kind of, look at that and get a specific plan for them. Too much of today's medicine is focused just on the problem. You know, even some of the electronic medical records are focused on, you know, what's the chief complaint and only address that. And, that's not really fair to the whole person. You know, if we just look at what hurts and focus only on that spot, because oftentimes that spot is really not what's causing the problem. It's things around that spot. You know, if you take knee pain for an example, you know, an orthopedic doctor may do an x-ray if somebody comes in with a knee pain, and they may see bone on bone. That's something we hear often that comes into the office. But, you know, if you were to look at everybody that's, you know, 60 to 80, they have a good bit of arthritis, most likely in their knees, but not all people have pain. So does that tell the whole story? There may be some muscular imbalances, maybe something as simple as, you know, the shoes they're wearing or their feet or what kind of exercise they've been doing. But if you just look on giving somebody a shot for the knee and moving on to the next person, or giving somebody a prescription and moving on to the next person, you may really miss an opportunity to help that person. Because, you know, the problem is not always where the symptom is. And I think that's, you know, most of what medicine is that the problem is not always where the symptom is. And, we have to look into that. You know, I've had a lot of running injuries, as we've talked about over the years. And I've had x-rays when I've went to, you know, physicians in the past. And often, most of the time, they don't even tell the story, you know, of what's actually causing the issues. Most of the time, there's some imbalance or a general tightness that's causing, you know, some compression of nerve or interference with nerves someplace. When we look at stiffness, there's always the muscles guarding something to try to keep that protect that part, so we stiffen up so we don't injure something further. So ignoring that or just stretching it beyond paying attention to what's actually causing it can actually make things different. And, you know, if you take that a little bit further into medicine, you know, sometimes we look at people that have symptoms like shortness of breath or whatever, and we have a differential diagnosis of what potentially could be wrong with people, and we look and see how those symptoms are related. And you take that one step further and you add nutrition to that, you know, it's largely observational. If somebody comes in and we say, you know, you're sick, you should eat plant-based, and here's a book, that's really not going to take into... It's probably not going to help that much because we don't know where we're meeting that person, whether that person has been vegan, whether that person has cooked over the years, whether what the person's likes, what their environment is, you know, how much time they have, you know, what do they like, and what are they actually currently eating right now? You know, we know that if you look at observational studies, that people that eat fruits and vegetables do better than those people eating junk food. But then there's, we have to figure out where people are when we meet them and what exactly are they eating. And sometimes people can't even remember what they're eating. They spend so much of their day just picking and grabbing and tossing something into their mouth. They don't know. So it takes a long time to actually, again, dive into what they're currently doing and how do we change their diet to make it better so that they can actually make it worse. Or I'm sorry, they can actually make it better. You know, give somebody a complex cookbook that has 20 different steps into it can be very frustrating if somebody's not used to cooking. On the other hand, giving somebody something very simple and bland when they're used to eating, you know, complex dishes and they like the way things look, it's not going to work. So we have to take all that into account. And that's, you know, again, why this practice gives us so much opportunity to actually take time to look into these things. And, you know, the biggest obstacle to change is education, whether it's educating people on the importance of exercise or changing their diet, whether even it's low salt or becoming plant-based. And with the addition of the classes into the practice, we've been able to take time and cook things that people can try. I've really liked these last couple of weeks where people are participating in cooking things. We've made several different soups and we discuss different tastes that people like different. We have a variety of different ethnic backgrounds in the classes and, you know, we can discuss the spices and herbs that they like to use over time and how we might incorporate those into the dishes. You know, how, you know, different size families play into the situation, whether it's a mixed household. So the classes really allow time to kind of delve into that, in addition to the science behind why one would want to continue to be plant-based or to actually continue to do this, even though it is a little bit more difficult. And, you know, obviously the holidays are a difficult time of the year. A lot of you that are plant-based, went to parties and most of those and get-togethers and most of those probably had people that weren't plant-based and asked you a lot of questions and maybe made digs at what you're actually doing and gave suggestions of what you should be doing. And it's a time of the year where you can kind of call into question what you're actually doing. I had somebody, you know, that's having some GI issues, even though she's plant-based. And we're trying to work through and figure out what might be the problem. And it was so frustrating. She's like, well, maybe I should just go back to eating chocolate and sugar cookies because if I'm not going to feel any better, then, you know, maybe I should just, you know, not worry so much. And that's hard this time of year, especially when those cookies and chocolates are all over the place. If they don't make you feel any worse, then it's hard to lose sight of, you know, why those might not ultimately be the best choice. And, you know, that's where the class comes in, you know, because we talk about the inflammation that some of these simple sugars can do as far as your brain and the connections between your neurons. We talk about, you know, the butter that can be hidden in things, how that can affect your cholesterol, the fats, vascular reactivity, how inactivity around the holidays can make things worse. You know, depression can rear its ugly head this time of the year with all the stress. You know, how do you get through that? We've had wellness challenges to help people make sure they're getting their miles and their exercise, you know, during the holidays. So, you know, I think that's, you know, the practice overall is kind of really evolved with the help of the members to what they actually need. And, you know, it all comes down to time. Just the ability to take time with people really helps. A few or several episodes back, I interviewed Victoria Sweet, and, you know, she wrote a book called Slow Medicine. And, you know, a lot of things, given time and patience, will sort itself out. But we're in a society that's really rushed for answers. You know, I talked to somebody that, you know, had some health issues, and they've been plant-based or vegan for, you know, 7 or 8 years. And, you know, she said, we really feel like we deserve extra credit for being nutritionally good compared to what we used to be. And as we talked, it's like, well, yeah, there was 71 years where they didn't eat very healthy. But this last 8 years or 7 or 8 years, they've eaten, you know, substantially better. And why aren't we, you know, getting all these bonuses, you know, for doing better? And you just don't turn the clock back quite that simple in every aspect. The good news for them is, you know, husband had terrible coronary disease with, you know, bypass grafts that were blocked off and stents that were blocked off. And he actually holds the record in my practice for the longest time on a treadmill, no matter what age. So, I mean, that's a great thing. Off most of his medications, except for the ones that need to be for stents. Everybody's off their cholesterol medicine. You know, she, no recurrence of any breast cancer. Blood pressure's, you know, under good control. So it's, you know, there are good things that happen, but, you know, it is an evolution of how you tune your diet and make it better. And, you know, sometimes we get in a little rush to, you know, things should be perfect just because we're plant-based, but it takes a little time to turn back the clock in some instances. So I guess, you know, that's a really long answer as far as, you know, how my practice has evolved, but, you know, it's evolved from a consultative practice focused on people, focused on observation. When I became vegan, and then I heard about Forks Over Knives and Dr. Esselstein, and I wanted to teach nutrition classes like he did, I continued to educate myself. I took the E. Cornell courses. I took the Pam Popper's courses. I've read books on both sides of nutrition, whether it's paleo, keto, plant-based, so I could hear both sides of the argument. Listened to every video and watched podcasts of other people so I could learn from them. Looked at the research, you know, read numerous papers. And, you know, this podcast has helped educate me. I've had, you know, Dr. Esselstyn and Dr. Furman and Dr. McDougall, on the podcast. And, you know, that's helped educate me as well. And just observation of my own patients, how things have went over time. It's evolved how I actually handle things. When we first started out in the nutrition class, you know, I would cook something simple and we talk. I actually used a whiteboard to, you know, do the discussions for the most part. Then I went to PowerPoint presentations with every class. We changed what we were cooking, made it a little bit more complex. We added chopping in class, you know, some knife skills. We've added shopping to the nutrition classes. We've had, you know, discussions with various topics and subjects. We've done group cooking. So that's all evolved over time by observing what works and what people like and keeping people interested. You know, I watch as I talk to people. I don't want people to go to sleep. I want them to be engaged. I want them to understand where I am as far as what I'm talking about. We have little quizzes, you know, that are group quizzes and ask questions and do discussions. And, you know, so I see how people are understanding, you know, what I'm talking about. And that's kind of how, you know, the whole practice has evolved. And, you know, Caitlin was here today, my PA student, and she said, you know, it's nice. It's laid back. People are happy. It's a pleasant environment. it's much different from a traditional medical practice when it's just, you know, check in, put your number, fill out a form, sit and wait, get taken back, sit in a room by yourself, wait for the doctor or the PA to come in, PA leaves, get a prescription, go get your labs, go on. You know, it's, we've taken all that sterility out, and it's back to kind of hometown medicine with a focus on wellness. So, you know, you can check out the website at drdelaney.com. It kind of puts things in a nutshell of what we do. We also offer the online classes for people that aren't in town. Or, you know, we obviously people can do everything, full membership that's out of town as well. But we have an online class that, you know, that give people access to the website and all our wellness challenges and a registered dietitian consultation monthly, or a consult with me, monthly. And so we, you know, we have different online things that we can, you know, do a lot of education that way. So, it's just been a great way to practice medicine, and it makes people feel a part of a practice and a part of a group. And that's really, really what we want, is people to feel a part of the group. We're going to have continued cooking that we then serve our elderly and take them, you know, what we've made and share with them, because that was a really good experience over the holidays, is to go to people's house and bring them, you know, a jar of soup and see them enjoy that and learn a little bit about it. We even had a 90-year-old that her family was interested in perhaps having her come to class now and see what we do. So, you know, it's all an evolution of, you know, observing what works and just enjoying being around people and seeing them get better. You know, I haven't written a statin in over a year. I've, you know, most people's blood pressure medicines we're backing off on. You know, I back off on diabetic medication. So it's all positive for everybody. People are starting to exercise that haven't exercised in years, you know, with the walking, with doing yoga. Now we have yoga in the office. So, you know, just the sky's the limit when you're looking at trying to improve people's lives through health and wellness. You know, the next thing that we're trying to launch are our goals for January in the new year, 2019, is to introduce an athletic a bundle. So bring nutrition into athletics. So people that are doing marathons, triathlons, CrossFit competitions, helping them to recover quicker, getting the best nutrients before, after, during events, because that's really what's lacking. You know, people are weekend warriors and, you know, they eat what they want because, you know, maybe they think they're burning enough calories that they can. Maybe weight is not really an issue, so they think they can eat the calories. But it's down the road, you know, to be able to do these fun activities for long periods of time, your body has to heal itself and recover. And the best way of doing that is to get adequate nutrition. And if your nutrition actually is causing inflammation and causing problems, then it's not helping you to recover and it's not helping you to get better. So we want to start working, you know, in the athletic community to help people make strides and improve their performance from the new nutritional aspect of things. So if anybody has any interest in speaking with us or joining in to learn more about that, please email me at drdelaney.com. It's drdelaney. And so we're going to be at various running events and hopefully showcasing some of these programs that we have to be able to help people step up their game and, you know, keep moving and keep mobile and keep healthy well until their late years. The biggest thing we have going on this spring is our conference, the fourth annual plant-based nutrition conference. Fourth annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference is the official title. You can go to the website to get a link directly there to buy your tickets. It's also on eventbrite.com. It's going to be a day-long event. As far as speakers go, Dr. Alan Goldhammer will be our keynote speaker. I'll be speaking, Addie will be speaking, and Nathan Meinert will be speaking as well. We're doing cooking and demonstrations. The venue is small enough so that, you know, it's a setting that you get to ask your questions in a group that it's not too big to be intimidating. So you get all your questions answered, get time to meet all the guests and interact with them. We'll have a host of some vendors to be able to look at different things. Mama Says will be there to try some of her food. Probably have the Tower Garden people that I'm a huge fan of to, you know, if people are interested in growing some vegetables on their patio and some other vendors. So, you know, I look forward to meeting you. It's a nice weekend. We're going to have a plant strong breakfast and lunch that's going to showcase some foods that we really like that don't contain sugar, oil, or salt. They're hand selected. There are recipes. A chef at Twin Isles Country Club will be preparing them. So we're really excited about showcasing those foods. Addie and I are also doing consults for people that are out of town the day before. There's a limited number of spots because of time, but if you have some interest and you'd like to meet us for a private consultation, that'll be available on Friday. So, you know, we'd love you to come down and spend a weekend here in Port Charlotte, Punta Gorda, and enjoy some sunny weather, get some vitamin D. We've got a lot of great walking paths, you know, a lot of sightseeing to do. It's certainly pretty weather and a lot of golf courses, tennis courts, whatever you like. It's a great time of the year, and you can hear some great speakers. So check it out. If you have any questions, again, feel free to email me at jamie@drdelaney.com or check out the website, and we'd love to hear from you. I think one of the biggest problems this time of year is people make these resolution with these great big goals that are really hard to achieve, and 2 or 3 days into it or a week or two into it, when something goes wrong, you know, it's given up and never to be thought of again until next January. And, you know, I think instead of, you know, this big giant goal, and in, you know, oftentimes they're, you know, around weight loss. People gain weight during the holiday season because they've been eating, you know, what they shouldn't have been eating, or kind of fallen off the wagon. So they want to fix things right away. They want to fix things in the first couple of weeks of January. And, you know, it just doesn't work that way. But people continue to get frustrated. And I think that weight loss is probably, you know, should not be the primary goal. I think it should be a secondary side effect of actually getting healthy. Because if you focus on the step-by-step process of eating more phytonutrients and more antioxidants and more colors in your diet and more fiber, the rest of it takes care of itself. If you work on, you know, starting to move more little by little, starting from where you are and working your way up. So instead of looking at that big goal of 50-pound weight loss and, you know, a marathon, you know, perhaps, you know, week to week it, what would you like to do? As far as, you know, what should your nutrition be, whether it's get sugar out of the diet, let's get animal products and dairy out of the diet, and work your way along that. Let's add in, what are we going to add? You know, maybe not so much negative, but, you know, I'm going to strive to eat my 4 pieces of fruit a day. I'm going to strive to get, you know, every color in every day. I'm going to make sure I get a big green salad in once or twice a day. And, you know, go from there, look at, you know, what maybe is bad, get rid of the oil, let's clean out the cabinets. If you've accumulated a lot of junk food, over the holiday from people visiting, you know, it's best to just get it into the trash can. Don't work your way through it. Just get rid of it. It's not worth giving to anybody else just to make them sick either. So put it in the trash so you, and get everything ready. I love to have, you know, fruit for breakfast and fruit after lunch. And if you get things cut up or make it simple for yourself, it makes it easy. You know, I'm in the mode where I come back from my run in the morning and I start chopping up my fruit that I'm going to have. Typically it's all there and available. Some of it may be already chopped up, others that I don't like to cut up early. You know, but I have it all readily available where I can see it, so I don't have to go hunting for it. It's in view, and I'm ready to go. I've started doing more chia seeds in the morning. You know, I kind of rotate whether I do flax or chia as far as my omega-3s, but putting some chia seeds and a little bit of plain soy milk and putting them in the microwave makes it kind of a warm breakfast cereal to add to my fruit. So that's the way I've been getting my omega-3s lately, and I really do enjoy that. My desserts at night are fruit-based, so whether it's frozen fruit that's pureed or just frozen fruit or just a piece of fruit, that's really what my dessert is, so I'm not going to stray from that. And it's very satisfying, and it's healthy, and it's hydrating, and that's my focus. I think one of the things for the new year is I need to focus more on hydration and getting more of that water in. Oftentimes, I wait to the end of the day, and I eat fruit and may have a cup of tea and have salad. So there's a lot of water in my food, but not a lot of just plain water. So that'll be something that I'll focus on. And, again, look at your movement. Are you going to try to, American Medical Association, American Heart Association recommends doing two strength training exercise days a week. So start by adding those into it. They don't have to be long. They don't have to be at a gym. They can be body weights, chair squats to start with, then work your way up to regular squats, some push-ups, planks. Those are all good ways to get started in the routine. So if you set aside time that you're doing your strength training a couple times a week, it could be yoga, could be Pilates. You've got those slots put in, so then you can add to them and change the routine as you go along and find out what you like. So those are, some ideas to start with. And like I said, the weight loss, that'll take care of itself. The idea at first is to start eating more healthy and do it on a consistent basis. Most of the time people fall off of their goals because they have a good day and then they have a couple bad days or, it's every other good days and they don't make any progress. And the only thing they're looking at is the scale. So sometimes it also helps to journal so you kind of have an idea of what you're actually getting into. If you're eating out every other day, when that's probably, and you write it down and you see it, then the next week you can make adjustments. I think it's good to be mindful of what you're eating, and if you don't have any rules as far as your intake goes and you just kind of graze all day long, then you really don't have any idea of your caloric consumption, and you can be off a significant amount. So, one way to do that is to actually just limit yourself to, your breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And if you're not eating in between, you don't have to actually worry about some of those other things. It's easy to kind of keep an idea of what you're doing. If it's just the three meals a day, there's no reason to have to keep dribbling food in all during the day. And make sure you're taking movement breaks. I talked earlier about my hip flexors being tight, and I'm sitting down right now when I'm doing this podcast, and I need to stand up between these little breaks while I'm doing that. But exercising for an hour a day and then sitting the rest of the day is not much more healthy than it doesn't give you that extra sitting is just causing more problems. So we have to be mindful that if you can get up and do some quick breaks, whether it's a short burst of calisthenics, walking around the office, some quick chair squats, moving around, really important to your movement. Make sure you're attentive to all your joints. Looking at your different mobilities and assess where your weaknesses are and start to address them. We all tend to have some tightness because, being hunched over computers, most people, if you walk down the street, you see even young kids looking down and their necks all bent and, they're all curled up. People are sitting on a bus curled up, looking at their phones or their iPads. And, it's leading to a severe reduction in the thoracic spine and then people aren't taking good breaths and we're not breathing correctly. So start paying attention to your overall posture and moving and trying not to get into these habits where we just sit all curled up all day long. If you want to get off of your blood pressure medications this year, consider it upping your exercise. There was a recent study published by the British Journal of Exercise, And they actually showed that exercise was the equivalent to medication in a lot of instances, and lowered blood pressure by about 9 millimeters of mercury. And it didn't really matter what kind of exercise. It was just to continue to exercise, whether it was strength training, walking, running, aerobic or not, continue to exercise, and people will see a drop in their blood pressure. And the average drop was about 9 millimeters of mercury. It's about being persistent and steady, just taking exercise as your medication. One of the things that motivates me to get up and get outside every morning is that I have two dogs that need to have some exercise as well. I want them to keep fit and keep their joints good, keep their weight down, and they enjoy it, and I enjoy being out with them in the fresh air first thing in the morning. So I know they want to go, they know I want to go, and we go out. So regardless, that's just part of my morning routine. And when you're training for an event, you know that you can't wait to that event day to do it. You have to actually prepare for it and have some sort of schedule that you want to gradually progress your training up to a certain event. So, by having little motivational goals for yourself on what you want to achieve or why you want to do something is really good. So whether it's keep your dogs happy, keep you happy. We also know that depression is treated with exercise does as good or better than medications. I particularly like being outside, fresh air, sunshine, seeing other people, hearing the birds. It's a good way to improve your mood in the morning. Doing some strength training and some mobility work in the evening is a really good way to relax, to help get, a better night's sleep. Working on your breathing in the evening is a good way to help prepare yourself to get ready to go to sleep at night, to get good sleep and recovery. So, not only set goals for what you want to do, but put the reason why. So if you have a why to what you're going to do, you're much more likely to do it. Give yourself a little challenge, like a streak. There was a thing on one of the runners' blogs that talked about doing 100 days of running, and I thought I see what I could do. Well, I went 17 days and then I missed Christmas Day. Does that mean the streak is over? No, it just means I missed that day, and I'll continue to see, maybe I'll put together 17 more days. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll be throwing swimming in there. Maybe I'll just want to add in an extra walk. But having those things in the back of your mind and little challenges are always good to kind of keep yourself honest. If you have a buddy that you can do something with, that's even better to have a goal. But there's lots of 5Ks out there. You can walk them or run them. To sign up for it gives you a little bit of motivation. And sometimes you're actually raising money and awareness for a good cause. February's Heart Month. There's a lot of American Heart Association walks going on in various communities all over. So, check those out to see if you can't get involved and get something on your calendar. If you're new to exercise, mix it up. Try something different. Find out what your passion is or what you like to do, whether it might be, riding bikes, stationary bikes this time of year, cross-country skiing, ice skating. Maybe you have different sports for different times of the year. Don't be set in stone. Mix it up, do what you like. But the idea is to do something every day, and you can maybe see the results. Does swimming drop your blood pressure more than biking or running? Does strength training help you out more? Where do your joints feel better? How do you incorporate a little bit of both? So those are some things that you can set for short-term goals, over the new years, along with, just trying to hone in your nutrition to make it as good as you possibly can. The last thing I'll leave you with is what we made in nutrition class this afternoon. And we did a cauliflower Alfredo sauce over sauteed mushrooms, red pepper, and asparagus. So I sauteed in a little bit of water and garlic the mushrooms and red peppers. And once they were cooked, I just put the asparagus on top and let it steam for a couple of minutes, and that was ready. For the cauliflower Alfredo sauce, I did the cauliflower in my Instant Pot, but you can do it on top of the stove, boil it till it's really soft in water, and then I drained that water off and used my immersion blender, but you can put it in a regular blender or and spin that cauliflower till it's nice and smooth. I added some soy milk and nutritional yeast and garlic to that, as well as black pepper, and just a splash of tamari. And it was great. I served that sauce drizzled over the steamed vegetables, sauteed vegetables, and everybody really liked it. If you're going to do it for a complete meal at dinner time, serve it over quinoa or whole grain pasta or a pearled barley or any kind of whole wheat that you'd like. And it's a really great meal. It's one of my favorites over the years. I've never been an Alfredo sauce because it was too rich for me. It gave me indigestion. But this cauliflower sauce is really nice. It's cheesy. It's light. And it's very nutritionally dense. The cauliflower is a good producer of nitric oxide. There's a tremendous amount of fiber in the whole thing. The mushrooms have anti-cancer properties. Get a lot of vitamin C from the peppers, and a lot of phytonutrients from and your chlorophyll from the greens and the asparagus. So enjoy that recipe. I wish everybody a happy and healthy and safe new year. Get your goals in order, but don't make them too hard. And I'll look forward to next week when I interview Dr. Cucuzella, and we'll get some tips on why everybody can run. And remember, go over to the website at drdelaney.com and get your tickets for the upcoming fourth annual Charlotte County Plant-Based Nutrition Conference. I hope to see you there or meet you at some running event this spring. Take care.